Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Karate Cafe. I'm Pete Shambo. I'm Study Shorin Ru Shorin Kan, and with me is Paul Wilson. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Pete. How's it going tonight?
And you study? What do you study?
Goju Flu Gung Lu Ru. Okay. No, I study Shorin Ru Kenshin Kan Karate.
Shorin Ru Kenshin Kan. Okay. I'm a little out of sorts tonight, so bear with me. This is another episode. We're in the beginning of June of 2007, for those listening and for those trying to catch up. You're catching up to us now. Paul, you've recently become a dojo owner.
Yes, sir. Well, I wouldn't call it an owner, but yeah, I've opened up a dojo. I like to think of it as an owner, it's an owner because, we're all there to train, I'm just kind of up in front, so.
Okay. And
taking out all the paperwork.
Yeah, the paperwork. Yeah, you find that there's more time off the floor or how does that work for you?
Well, actually, I'm instead of thinking about actual karate, I'm thinking more about the class, how I'm going to run the class. Instead of I used to just sit around and muse about how's the footwork on this thing or whatever, and now it's more geared less to for my own personal edification as to, try and get a point across to someone.
So you find that there's a lot of difference between being the person that runs the dojo and just being a student that helps out or that teaches?
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot more pressure. You've got to be on. You really can't have, a bad night. You can't be gripey. you can't be you can't be slow. You can't be, let's just not do the basics tonight. You've got to be, on. You've got to be at 100%, every class. And, you've got to have the energy up. And, there are some days where, I've got a young son and maybe he didn't sleep so well, so I didn't get some good sleep. And, I had a hard day at work or whatever, and I blow in there and I'm just spent, come straight from work and maybe I had to work late and I'm just like, oy. And I got to work out on top of that.
Yeah.
The other side of that coin as being the instructor is you can kind of slack off a little bit. One of the things I find myself doing, and now that I am running the class, I look back and, I look at all these that instructors that I see that are, why aren't you working out? This 25 basics, you should be working out. And, they're not. All my instructors always worked out. I actually, as an assistant, had to say, why don't you walk around and teach, and I'll run the class, because I was trying to get that instructing time, and so now I find it, kind of an ease on my, my tired soul at sometimes when I can go I can do maybe five or six techniques or a part of the set, and then kind of slack off and point some stuff out while they're working out, and so that's the good side of it. But the bad side is just the pressure to be, the sensei.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least you, you have your lesson plans already, do them just as you're doing warm-ups, you do get your lesson plan?
Yeah, I did that for the first couple of months, and it got to be, I started kind of, evaluating myself, and I call it the hip factor, how long my hands are on my hips. Oh. When I'm standing with my hands on my hips, kind of, looking at the ground, trying to think of, okay, now what next? Or what drill am I going to do next? Or, because when it comes organically, if you're teaching somebody a technique, or maybe you're doing a kata and a piece of bunkai pops up, you can go okay, well, here's this. Well, if you have to create the drill from scratch, so to speak, and all my students are beginners. There's one guy who's my senior student. And he studied a couple different styles, and now he's over on my style, so he picks it up pretty quickly. But all the rest of them, you have to kind of spoon feed a little bit and kind of get them up to a certain amount of speed. So I can't just, pull some of the cool fun drills out. I've got to make sure I'm getting their foundations in. So I'm trying to create drills to, get them down the path, get their stance right, get them doing, change body right and correctly as I see it. Anyway, so the longer I stand there having the muse on that, the more I feel like I'm dropping the ball. So now I'm taking the time, you know, like, you know, when I go to bed at night, I kind of think about it a little bit, and maybe like at lunch on the day before, you know, the day after, I kind of review and, okay, we did this, and then we need to do that. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get it more of a natural flow of, you know, Thursday night we do one thing, and Saturday night we kind of reinforce it a little bit, or Saturday morning.
Now, excuse me, but in class, percentage-wise, how much of it is structured and how much time do you leave for explanations or, you know, for working on something outside of what you planned?
The structured plan, when it goes off right, it's probably, like on Thursday nights, it's really an hour and a half class, although I try and just put an hour of actual structure time, and then the actual half hour is, you know, let's talk about stuff or somebody asks a question or whatever. But I'm more inclined now, and I'm really easily led astray by questions, because they'll ask the question, and then I'll answer it, and then they'll ask another question, and I'll answer it, and something will follow on, and then another, and, you know, so I really haven't got that kind of, like, and I kind of like that, because it's dynamic, and it makes me think, and it helps them understand, and it just feels like it's a little more flowing of class, but, like, you know, I want to make sure that I'm getting in what I think needs to be get in, you know, hit on that, you know, block of time. So the majority of it, you know, let's say 60 minutes, there's probably 40 minutes that's structured. It's, you know, 25 basic techniques, and, you know, if no one's warmed up, we do the warm-ups, and then, you know, then whatever drill or whatever I'm putting in. So probably 40 minutes is, you know, devoted to, like, you know, this is the plan, and, you know, this is the stuff I want to hit. And then the 20 minutes, which really doesn't seem that long, is, you know, just the cushion of asking questions, and, you know, somebody gets some drinks, and, you know, but then I count on that overflow of an extra half an hour to kind of absorb some of that up. So I'm thinking pretty much the whole hour is structured, but maybe a half hour is loose and free.
Okay, I have a question that's always intrigued me. People that have listened to a lot of our podcasts know we talk a lot about the tradition and respect and how a lot of dojos have gotten away from the way it's done, or the way we perceive it to be done in Okinawa. Did you start as a traditional dojo, or with the bowing in, with speaking in Japanese, or are you playing with that, or are you sticking with the tradition you were taught?
Yes. what I did was, because it's, I started it in a yoga studio, and my first student was a friend of mine, and I knew he really wasn't really going to buy into the whole martial arts angle, but he just thought it was kind of interesting to take martial arts as a workout. So when I first started, it was just he and I. And so what I would do, or he and me, him and me, I don't know. Anyway, I don't know everything, people. anyway, we, you know, so we started working out. So no, I didn't start it out with a traditional bow. But what I said in my head was, the first student that I had that joined the association, I would then switch over to a formal class, because, I mean, that's all part of their growth is in the style, and part of the association and getting tested is they have to know the protocol and all that good stuff like that. So last week, actually, not last month, but this week I actually did the official anointing. We had one of our students join the association. So I made a handbook for him with all the terminology and the protocol and blah, blah, blah. And I think I talked about him a couple weeks ago on the show. Anyway, and so I said, okay, and I told the class, and I said, okay, now this is the way it's going to work. You know, and I kind of went through a quick, you know, this is the way you bow in, this is the way you bow out, you know, and this is, and he's studying, you know, he tells me every day, he'll send me an email, like, I'm studying this, or he'll ask me a question on that, and, which is great, because, you know, I really haven't done it in a while, so it's getting me back up to speed, too.
Yeah.
But I decided that from that point on, it's going to be a formal class. Now, I told the people who are, you know, just kind of there and working out, I said, look, you know, that it's going to be formal, and you can buy into it, or you can just kind of, you know, go through the motions and hope for the best. I don't know how that's going to work out, but that's my plan.
Well, in my opinion, you tell the people that aren't used to it or didn't expect it that this is all part of the traditional Japanese way, and eventually they'll come to understand and maybe even appreciate the ritualism of it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I was in the Navy, you know, and the Navy has a lot of pain in the ass rules. I mean, like every military outfit, I'm sure, and pretty much every outfit. But, you know, the Navy's got a lot of tradition. And while I didn't really enjoy the Navy, and I didn't really enjoy a lot of the traditions, I understood the tradition, and I understood why a lot of it was there, and some of it was actually kind of cool. I mean, you know, and getting the dressed up and, you know, wearing the stuff and, you know, the history behind it. And so that's kind of what I hope will be kind of the catch on it, is if, you know, people don't focus on, like, oh, you're bowing to somebody, is what you catch on is, like, why are they bowing to somebody? And, you know, what does this mean when they say that? And, you know, I keep the class kind of light. I don't, you know, I joke around a bit, and, you know, I don't, because, you know, I'm sure maybe a few of our listeners have noticed that I joke around. And so, I mean, it's not like, you know, you screwed up, do push-ups, you know. I don't come from that line of learning. My instructor wasn't like that, and I don't buy it. So I try and keep it light and try and keep it interesting. So I'm hoping that maybe, you know, they don't get so intimidated by the formality part of it, and, you know, they buy into it. And, you know, again, this is, you know, my hope and dream, but I don't know. There may be some people that get turned off and don't want to come. I don't know.
Now, you have mostly new students or some with some experience, but not in your style. Have they sparred yet?
No, not yet. We have, and he probably actually listens to the podcast, I know, so he's probably going like, yeah, when are we going to spar? We've kind of slopped around a little bit, but not much. And I need to start doing that with him a little bit, just because of the fact that, I mean, I know he came from kind of that background, and so he can, I know he can handle himself, so yeah, we could probably throw around a little bit. We've been maybe a little, well, in self-defense, I'm trying to not make him so rigid. I don't want to be so rigid with him on it, because he knows how to move. He's taken some boxing and some kickboxing, so he knows how to move, and maybe even better than I have. He's taking some jiu-jitsu, so, you know, he's at a point where, like, yeah, he's probably ready to go ahead and start learning the basics and sparring. You know, he can take a shot, and, you know, he knows how to fall, so we should probably do that. I don't want to get too wrapped up in it. I don't want to focus on it too right now, because I'm so busy, you know, in my mind trying to get the foundations on.
Oh, yeah.
With all the other people, that, you know, if we start playing around, then I want to see the other people want to start playing around, and then chaos, my friend, chaos.
Yeah, chaos ensues. So what aspect of being the head instructor didn't you expect that you're finding that you're doing a lot of, or spending more time than you thought of?
Frapping paperwork, you know, and I mean, you know, the actual, you know, admin and also the you know, marketing part. It's not a commercial dojo, and it's not, you know, it's not for profit. It's not in any way, shape, or form. You know, I'm looking at this like, this is my retirement, woohoo! But, you know, I mean, I wouldn't mind making a couple of bucks out of the deal, you know, and but by the same token, I want more students, because of the fact that, you know, it's more dynamic. You have a few more students in there, you got different body styles, different attitudes, different abilities, and it makes it a little more organic. And when I took Tai Chi, that was one of the things I really liked about Tai Chi, was you had all the people around you, and you were all doing Tai Chi, and you're all doing something together, you know. And I feel the same way about karate, is that, you know, when you need someone else to bounce off of, but the more people around, it kind of raises your game up, you know. So, you know, one of the things that's on my mind is, you know, just getting people in the door, you know, getting people in the door to see it. And then, you know, because if they can see it, even if they don't love it, they know it's there. And they, you know, someone says, like, yeah, I'm thinking about taking some kind of, oh, well, there's a place down there that does it. This last weekend, I did a demonstration for a local, our neighborhood association where we live, and they were looking for someone to do, you know, they want musicians or jugglers or something, and I said, well, hey, can I do a martial arts demonstration? And they contacted me, like, on Friday, and it was on Saturday afternoon, and said, yeah. So I had to come up with a demo real quick. And me and Sean, my senpai, we went down there, and we put on a little quick demo, and I had some cards ready to go. And I mean, so I was like up late making business cards and little flyers and trying to think about how to do the demo. So, I mean, there's all that stuff that it's not just training. It's not just the physical part. It's the, you know, doing records and making sure that, you know, the word's getting out and, you know, making sure that people are signing in and, you know, people, you know, all that stuff, which, you know, I kind of knew from being an assistant, but, you know, I don't really have an assistant now.
You didn't have to pay attention to it.
Yeah, I didn't really have to pay. Someone would get it, you know.
Yeah. So, well, is there a part of the teaching that you find different as the lead instructor?
Not really. The thing that I find a little more different is I don't have someone to bounce anything off of right now. I mean, you know, when you've got, and I'm sure you feel the same way, you know, when you've got two or three of the black belts on the floor with you, if there's something that's just flummoxing you, you can always go bounce it off somebody.
Yeah.
You know, you can, you know, hey, Gene, or, you know, and whoever, you can just go up to them and you're like, hey, man, what do you think about this thing? Or, you know, I was thinking it was this. What do you think? You know, and I don't have anyone there to do that. And conversely, if I've got, you know, more than, you know, two students, there's one more person to ask a question of. So, you know, you don't have to focus on all the students that are there. So that helps, you know, having a more senior student or another black belt on the floor. So I kind of miss that.
Huh. Okay. Now, I don't know if there's any difference between being an instructor or a senior instructor, but do you treat the students any differently, do you think? Are you more like a drill instructor now than before or anything like that?
Well, I didn't think I was going to be, but I think I have to be. I had to send out an email today. I sent out a blanket email with, you know, stuff that happened over the weekend with the demo and reminding people that we're having a formal class now and all that good stuff like that. But last Thursday, we were working out, and I got there, and one of the students, like two reps into the 25 basic. I mean, we like had like two punches done, and they were like, I need a drink, and they just like walked off. And got a drink, and then, you know, and then they came back, and we did maybe three or four more techniques, and they're like, I have to go to the bathroom. Off they went to the bathroom, and I was like, and, you know, they came back, and
it was the same person both times?
Yeah, same person. And, well, you get a 1 in 3 chance. I only have 3 students.
Okay.
So, but I am looking. Anyway, see, there it is right there, marketing. Anyway, and then like a little bit later, you know, they were doing the basics, and they just kind of would just kind of give it up a little bit, you know, and so part of me is kind of like, you know, got to go like, you know, you need to focus and you need to, you know, push it. But by the same token, you know, they're just there kind of to work out. So, you know, I don't know, and I'd love some input from our viewers and our listeners and our readers on the forums. Is there a way to combat that? I mean, I know we got some senior guys out there that with some instruction, and just some guys my level-ish that have their own dojos, and, you know, I'm like, hey, what do you do with the person that, you know, just doesn't want to work out? And I guess it's kind of different because they're not, you know, a part of the dojo. I don't really consider them part of the dojo. I consider them people who are coming there to work out.
Well, I don't know if this was, I think this was after you joined our crew. We did the difference between a student and a karateka.
Yeah, I think that was right before I joined.
Yeah.
And yeah, and that's what it is. There's between customers and students.
Right, thank you. Yeah.
And you know, there are people who are customers, and there are people, you know, who are students, and there's some who are just like right in the middle.
So, as the lead instructor, you see that. I mean, when I teach a class, the difference between a student and a customer, you try to get the customer to be more engaged. But as the lead instructor, as the sensei, you it's more of your job to get them engaged. But on the other hand, you don't want them to leave the dojo. I mean, there's a line between marketing and you know, between business and the art.
Right. And that's where, you know, I mean, and see, that's the other thing. I mean, I'm kind of comforted by the fact that I'm not running it as a business, and I'm in a good situation where I'm not worried about a bottom line. So, you know, that's good. So it kind of gives me that a little bit of leeway to kind of go to be able to say, and I'm giving this person, you know, another chance to, like, you know, focus. I send out the email. Hopefully they read the email, realize that I'm talking about them, and then, You know, well, and I'll say something at the head of class as well, just to let them know that, you know, you're here to work out. And you're here to work out.
Now, would you say, I don't know if there's even a good answer to this, a correct answer to this. Is it more fun, or are you having as much fun as you did, or are you finding it more of a job?
You know, that is a good question, my friend, and I don't have a good answer for you, because it's pretty fun, but I mean there's so much more stuff that it takes up more of my time, mental if nothing else, than and you know when I'm on the, and I'm not as getting as good a workout as I used to, because hey, I'm teaching, you know, and when you only have X amount of students, you know, it's like you don't get to really play with somebody. So, you know, what I usually do is I'll have them, you know, do 10 on one side, 10 on the other, and then I'll step in, you know, or I'll rotate them through, or, you know, I'll demonstrate on my senpai, you know, 4 or 5 times so I can get it down a little bit, you know, before I, you know, have them. So I just demonstrate the crap out of it, you know, for about 4 or 5 times. So I have it in my head. So the bummer is I'm not getting as good a workout, and I miss that.
Now, given that all your students are new, you've got 3 students, a majority of them, we'll say, or 2 of them have never taken karate before?
Right.
So do you give them a history lesson on the background of the martial arts during class? Or at all?
Usually when they come, like, you know, for the first class or whatever, if it's, because what I have been doing was, like, the last 2 classes of the month are designated as the beginner's class. So if anybody wants to come, I'll generally say, you can go ahead and come anytime you want. But, you know, we'd prefer it to be that, because that way everyone knows, you know, classes may be a little bit slower that day. Okay. You know, if I get bigger, it's not going to be as much of a problem if I get more students in. But, yeah, I mean, I talk to him about it, and I give him a history of, basic history of, you know, the way Okinawan arts formed, as I understand it, you know, and Kabuto as well, the weaponry.
Yeah, and your lineage.
And my lineage, and just, you know, maybe how, you know, the flow of how they think martial arts came, you know, through China and India and through China and whatnot. And I try and get him, you know, knowing that there's this rich history, and that's, you know, a lot of people worked pretty hard on this, and it's that it's more than just an art, it's more than just, you know, a physical part of an art. And I try and talk to him about that, because I really want him to, like, really, you know, like, wow, I'm part of something bigger, or really the way I look at it, you know, I'm part of something bigger.
Yeah, and you let him know that you're not at your rank because you decided that's where you wanted to be.
Well, no.
No, you know what I'm getting at.
Because I'm a bad mofo?
No, because you didn't have somebody promote you to you didn't promote yourself to your rank. You'd let them know that it's all.
I didn't run down to Kinko's and make myself a hunchy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I talk about that a little bit, but I mean, yeah, I mean, I feel I earned what I got, you know.
Well, and yeah, but I mean, that's
somewhere there's a file cabinet in Okinawa with my name in it, you know. So,
well, to me, that's cool and that's important. To be a little bit cold about it, that's a little bit of the marketing too. To point out that you've earned what you've got, and you can prove that you've earned what you got, and it wasn't, you asked your students, "Do I deserve to be a 7th degree?" and they said yes.
Yeah, well, but, you know, hey, I've only got 3, and they're probably pretty easily swayed right now, so...
Yeah.
Next week, it'll be Grandmaster Paul talking to you.
But 3 turns into 6, 6 turns into 12.
That's right.
You know, you get them to be enthusiastic and to be able to say that, you know, he's not just some guy that made his own certificates.
Right. And I kind of want him to learn, you know, one of the things I try and do, like at the demo the other day, and when I demonstrate the self-defense techniques and stuff for a beginner, is, you know, you know, that it's not magic, and, you know, I'm not Chuck Norris, and, you know, in the real sense or the internet sense, you know, that, you know, I'm just a guy, and I've just been working on this for a while, you know, I mean, and there'll be stuff that when, as an instructor, when I'm teaching somebody, like, you know, just like a front kick, and, you know, their balance is off, and they're like they're flustered because they can't do a front kick, and I'm like, look, I can do it. And, you know, it's not that I'm super gifted. I mean, I've been plugging away at it for 2 decades, granted, but, you know, I mean, I worked at it for a year or so, and, you know, or however long, and I got it, the mechanics of that down, and now I'm at a point where I can do it what I feel pretty competently and fluidly, and, you know, my balance is decent and whatnot, but, you know, I still waver from time to time. I still lose my footing from time to time. It's you know, I'm not Mr. Miyagi. You know, so I try and debunk it a little bit, and I don't want to make it, you know, like, ooh, you know, he's a third degree. Like, some people, when they ask me, I try not to make it that big of a deal. Like, yeah, well, you know, well, what belt are you? You know, I'm a black. Are you a black belt? Yeah, well, yeah. And it's not that big a deal. Yeah. You know, and it's a longer view, you know, from Shodan to, you know, Judon than it is from 10th Q to first, you know. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Anyway, exactly. So you know, I just let them know that, you know, it's a journey, you know, and you just gotta kind of hop on the train and ride it, and you know, you just do as best as you can, and yeah, some stuff will work, some stuff won't, you know, and enjoy it.
Okay, now to conclude this, to wrap this up a little bit, are you glad that you started your own dojo, and is it something you can see yourself doing for a long time, or do you want to go back to working at somebody else's dojo?
No, I absolutely love it, and if I have to end up working, you know, at somebody else's dojo, then you know that's fine. I mean, there was a time when I was looking at another style of shōnen-ryu down here just because I, you know, it was too hard. I couldn't find a place to get in, and I just really wanted to work out, and they were kind enough to let me come work out with them. But you know, I wanted to stay in my style. I really like to teach in my style, and I wanted to teach my style. So. Yeah, and you know, when I move somewhere else, I'll open up a dojo then too. Mm. You know, unless yeah, you know, I happen to move into town where there's somebody who outranks me, in which case I just think that would be disrespectful. Unless they said, "Yeah, go ahead." Mm. But no, yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy teaching. I enjoy because I still learn while I'm teaching. I mean, there's still stuff that I'll say it. And I'll demonstrate it. I mean, it's happened several times since I started teaching. And so I'll do something and I'll say it and I'll go blah, and then 2 seconds later I'm like, oh. You know, that's how that works, yeah. You know, just because, you know, but I had to, some, you know, domino had to fall on my head to make that connection, and to make that connection, I had to have this class, so.
Yeah, yeah. So, have you seen any good movies lately?
Well, I've seen some interesting DVDs, or a DVD, and continuing with our Karate Cafe Goes to the Movies, or to the Netflix.
Well, we'll have to get a jingle.
Yeah, really. We'll have to, you know, dun, a little dancing popcorn with little black belts on them. I'll do give you a quick review of a DVD that I. It was a two DVD set, but I only watched the first DVD called Easy Techniques for Self Defense, 2005, from a guy named Gene Simcoe, who is a jiu-jitsu instructor in I think up in New York State, maybe in the city, and he has black belts in both Brazilian jiu-jitsu and, as they say, classical jiu-jitsu. I guess maybe there's some sort of, they can't say Japanese, I don't know, but it's classical jiu-jitsu is what they call it. First off, guy looks like Seinfeld. It's kind of freaky. So, you know, but I watched it because, you know, I just, any of the ones with self-defense, I kind of like, you know, I just want to see.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I have the ending answer for self-defense, but just, you know, to see, because we've all seen some really questionable crap. So, and this DVD, it started out, and I was kind of shaking my head a little bit, and kind of, you know, going, not so much. But he kind of won me back in the end. And the reason why he won me back was because the actual techniques he used, maybe not so much on the easy side, but his concepts were pretty sound. The concepts that he had were where he just wanted to do a couple of techniques that would be, you know, more guaranteed to work. You know, he wasn't gearing it for a martial artist. He was gearing it for someone who just wanted to, you know, take a DVD home and learn.
So it was mostly for street self-defense.
And being a jiu-jitsu guy, you know, he was actually saying, like, yeah, you know, you go to the ground, you don't know what you're going to land on, you know, that kind of thing like that. So the production quality was okay. Just one moment. I had to kiss my child. Good night. The production quality was okay. He had kind of a silly opening where, like, you know, there's a lady walking through a parking lot, and they got jumped, and then he was like, you know, he kind of wandered in with, like, his hands in his pockets.
And don't let like, like
the 1940s detective walking into the pool of light, you know, in the movies and that kind of thing. Anyway, and then he walks into his school and proceeds with the thing. His assistant that was helping him, it was one of his students, and they had, like, matching shorts. They had, like, cargo shorts. And, like, the assistant instructor had, like, a green T-shirt on and green cargo shorts on. And he had, like, a tan shorts on and khaki cargo shorts on. And I was like, okay. But, you know, I guess maybe that's what they're thinking that people on the street wear. I don't know. The audio really wasn't that great. He went over some, you know, basic awareness stuff, which was, you know, good, okay. then he went into, which I guess was, like, his first essential technique, and it was for a rear bear hug. And he said over and over in this video, he was like, you know, oh, you don't have time. There's a lot of blocks, and it's a lot of stuff you have to think of, and, you know, you don't have time for that. And I'm like, well, yeah, but if you're a martial artist, not so much. Yeah. But anyway, he said that this technique that he was showing was always reliable, and it was essentially, you know, stepping behind the guy. You know, it's like a rear bear hug. The guy comes around you, has your arms trapped.
Okay.
Or and was, you know, kind of step to the side and step your leg behind, and then, you know, reach down and grab their pants or, you know, behind the knees and kind of flip them up and sit down, you know, and falling backwards.
Yeah. But you would have to be comfortable with falling, or it's not going
to... Well, yeah, you have to be comfortable with falling. And so he said, you know, this is always reliable, and he was going to try and operate a lot from that. So, and then as soon as he fell, he sprawled. And then he didn't really explain what you're supposed to do from there. And so I was like, okay, well, you just told somebody to take somebody to the ground. You're still in there. They still have a hold of you. You still have a hold of them. Maybe not so much. You know, and then he did the same thing with a rear choke and a full Nelson. And so he chose to use essentially the same technique for a rear choke and a full Nelson. And he was showing, but one of the ways he was showing, like, you know, someone comes and picks you up off the ground, you, like, you know, hook your leg back behind their leg so they can't pick you up. I was like, okay, that's pretty good. But he didn't do any really escapes.
Yeah, so he didn't complete it. So basically what I'm getting from it is that the person, your attacker, was so in shock because you knew what to do that would be the end of the attack.
I guess so. Well, later in the video, and that was a little bit later in the video, he actually got back to, like, okay, now you're on the ground. But, you know, he would show how to, like, try and get up and get away. He did one when, you know, the guy was in your guard, and how to push off from their hips and how to slide out. And so he got some of that stuff, and he finally kind of got around to getting up and getting away. But he would never really, you know, do something where you're breaking loose and you're getting away. So that was, he would show, like, a transition to being mounted on him, and I was like, you know... but, you know, but then he would, you know, for every, like, bad thing, there would be, like, maybe two good things. Like, he, you know, he was always talking about control. He wasn't talking about punching people. He wasn't talking about kicking people. He's talking about taking control of, you know, and, you know, controlling the person, not letting them throw you around. He was, you know, his techniques for, like, guarding yourself against punches and kicks were pretty good, you know, and making yourself a little smaller, bringing your hands up, having them in a ready position. You know, and he kept saying, like, oh, you know, this way you don't have to remember so many blocks. And I'm like, well, you know, whatever. You know, it was kind of generalizing a little bit, and that kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
He only showed, like, one kick, which was a front kick, but he showed how to use it as a counter, how to check them, how to stop them. So that was pretty good. He was talking about picking your targets. But one thing that I didn't... like was when he would kick, he would do the front kick and then he would drop his foot, you know, and basically end up walking right into the guy.
Yeah.
So, and I don't advocate that, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
He did talk about being able to escalate your technique, you know, about, you know, making sure that you leave yourself open to do what you need to do, kicking or punching or whatever. he did show some stuff about being tackled, on how to counter being tackled. How to check the opponents when they when they came in and how to like put your arm back there if they're behind you and I figure out where they're at. And I'm like, you know, your average guy trying to learn self-defense isn't good. That's you know, pure jiu-jitsu, man, or that's pure martial arts. You're not going to think about, okay, this guy's grabbing me. Let me slip my hand back there and make sure I know where he's at.
So how many times did you have to watch the DVD before you could execute any of the moves?
Well, you know, well, I mean, as a martial artist, a lot of that stuff was, I mean, there was some stuff in there. I was like, oh, okay, that's how you do that. Because, you know, I don't do a whole lot of grappling. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, that's a pretty good move. But so a lot of that stuff, as a martial artist, I would have felt confident doing. Mm-hmm. As a non-martial artist, I think it would be one of the kind of thing where, and he was advocating, he's saying, like, you know, you need to get a partner and train this.
So as a martial artist, you found it interesting, if only because it showed you some other moves or some other applications. But
right.
the DVD was targeted towards non-martial artists, and you don't think it was much use for a non-martial artist?
No, because something like, I mean, you know, he would have good tips like, you know, like how to get, when someone's mounting you, how to try and get out of that or you know, better your position, you know. But then you know, he did like a knife attack and some, like a good thing he said by that was, you know, don't count on being more skilled than your opponent. I was like, all right, yeah, I can buy that. His gun defense was okay because it was kind of the same. It was it developed off his knife defense, and it was essentially the same techniques. The thing I did like it was a lot of the techniques it was the same one, and he would point that it came back to, you know, this is the same technique. But at one point he said, well, when you get the gun and you turn the gun, and now you're in firing position, so you can go ahead and pull the trigger. And I'm like,
no. Yeah. So now, this DVD was on Netflix, and what was the name of it again?
It is called Easy Techniques for Self-Defense. It is, I watched the first disc of a 2-disc series. Apparently, he's got several DVDs out. A lot of them are judo or jiu-jitsu DVDs. A lot of them are, I guess he's pretty big in the jiu-jitsu world, especially on the East Coast. So, of course, you know, his blurb is all, you know, he's... trains law enforcement and da-da-da. And one of the things he did go into, which I kind of thought was strange, was he went into a whole thing about, you know, restraining people. And I'm like, well, defense is not restraining, you know. And he was talking about cuffing, and I'm like, well, I think the cops have got that covered, dude. You know, they don't need me to take care of it.
Yeah, I usually don't carry my handcuffs with me.
Exactly. And one of the he taught how to do a kimura, which was, you know, kind of cool because, yeah, he's got a point. He says, you know, it's a technique that'll pretty much work all the time. And as we all know, as martial artists, that's one of the things that that beat the Gracies back in the day. The great patriarch of the Gracies was beaten with a kimura. Yeah. And that's why it was named by a man named Kimura. But just one thing he did point out was he was talking about fighting someone on the ground, and he said, he says, you could do like a Brazilian jiu-jitsu move and do this. He said, you know, or, you know, you could do this. And then he says, and if you're the only two guys in the room, that might work. And I was like, huh. Finally, some one of them, you know, one of those guys go like, you know, you don't want to be grappling them if you're not the only two guys in the room.
Yeah, really.
And I like that. And then he also demonstrated a technique for pulling someone off a person.
Huh.
So I was like, okay, well, that's good. You know, it's a counter move. It's an offensive move, but it's, you know, it's pulling somebody off. And then he said, okay, and then you transition into the techniques that I've already showed you. So, you know, he kind of lost me at the beginning, but then he kind of got me back at the end. So, and since there's two DVDs, you know, I might think about looking at the next one now.
Okay. So, let's go straight to the mailbag.
Okay.
So we haven't gotten a lot of mail this week. We've got one letter that I've got to follow up on, and we may have a surprise for people or something a little extra. What have you got out of the anything off the boards?
And off the boards, I got a submission for my Things That Make You Go Kia segment. Did you have the music for that?
No, sorry, I don't. I should have had that called up.
Can you hum something?
I can't. I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket.
The dynamic martial artist. Well, we got a couple of suggestions from our good friend Dan, who hosts a podcast over at Podzor, and He also does a martial arts podcast, and he's a good guy. There are a bunch of guys up in Michigan. Peace out to my brothers out there. He gave some suggestions for the segment, and so I gotta give props to those for those of people who haven't read the boards. I'm just recounting what he wrote on the boards. Some suggestions for the names are Punchin' Bout Willis, which is a pop culture thing, I guess. No, never mind. you may be doing, and it says, your school does what? Marshall Farts, with an F.
Yeah.
Punching Points, which that's all right. And then, of course, my favorite with some of the ones that he sent are things that make you throw up in your mouth a little. Which is true, and I will just read the first one that he posted out. Which again, the people on the forum. If you haven't gone to the forums, where are the forums, Pete?
I think they're at karatecafe.com/forums.
I think you're correct. And if you go there, you'll find the a topic on there for suggestions for things that make you a Kia. Which, I mean, the name may change. And the first thing that he mentioned was any school that has Super, Ultimate, Total, or USA in the title of the school.
There you go.
And that kind of makes me throw up in my mouth a little, because there's, and also goes with, you know, like extreme and you know, yeah. And I also, I expanded that with, I put with dragon or tiger or combat in there.
Well, that goes back to what we were talking about in the main body of the podcast. You have to balance. Well, not, we didn't touch on that, but you have to balance marketing with the arts. You can't go overboard one direction or the other.
Yeah, and you know, it's, I mean, you're trying to rig people in, and you know, and by saying, you know, total karate, or you know, yeah, ultimate self defense. I was like, well, you know, you're saying that no one in the world can beat you.
Yeah, exactly.
and you know, it pays to have confidence, but let's be real. So you know, and generally, a lot of times you'll go in there, and it'll be, you know, some school with a bunch of kids.
Exactly.
You know, so it's I got issues with that. That would be that. Do you have any? Did we get anything in the mail from any suggestions?
No, that was it. We got the one letter that I'm working on, which is we'll see how that pans out before I talk too much about it.
Okay. Yeah. We'll keep them coming back.
Yeah.
If you guys want to send us an email, it's at karatecafe@gmail.com.
Yep, and the forums are, again, are karatecafe.com/forums.
That's right. You can post there on the forums, and Dan will get a gift certificate to the Karate Cafe Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
he can pick out any title that he wants on the third shelf.
Hey, Paul, you're right. We should start a Hall of Fame. We'll charge people $300 to be inducted into our Hall of Fame, and they can spend another $300 for the dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know, and I sent you this email, Pete, and I got to share it with our viewers. You know, everyone's talking about, we had a podcast a while back about the Hall of Fame, and I was fiddling around on the internet, as I'm often doing, and I found a website that had a bunch of pictures from some instructor's induction into the Hall of Fame, to the United States, like, you know, whatever it is. This could go in the things that make you throw up in your mouth. It's, you know, the United States Martial Arts Association of America International Association.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And, yeah, Hall of Fame. And anyway, so they had all these people, and they were all in their tuxedos and da-da-da-da, and they were mentioning how, and Bill Wallace was inducted into the Hall of Fame. And they had all these pictures, and Bill Wallace was there in jeans and a T-shirt.
Yeah, that was good.
Because, you know, he's probably been inducted in, like, 4 jillion of them, and some of them that are actually, you know, of merit, which, you know, and so, you know, and now he's probably, like, he's in town for a seminar, and they throw one of these together, and so he's like, yeah, thanks for the dinner, you know.
Yeah. Cool.
But anyway,
this is giving me some ideas for moneymakers. I'm going to look up in one of the largest city around here phone book, find some guy named Bill Wallace, and say that we're going to have him at the Hall of Fame dinner, and you should come to it.
Oh, there you go. And we should find a guy, some guy named Chuck, and some guy named Norris, and then you just emphasize the Chuck and Norris, and then the rest of their names are in lower font.
There we go. Yeah, I bet you I could get good money.
Yeah, and then beat a hasty exit out of town.
So, yeah. So, well, I think that's about it for tonight. It's getting a little late on the East Coast here. You've listened to another episode of Karate Cafe. We hope you enjoyed it. You can email us, or we really want to hear email. Let us know. We're getting new listeners all the time. The emails we are getting are a lot of them are from people that have just found us, which I find interesting. That's why in the beginning I said it was June of 2007. And we'll talk to you next week. Take it easy, Paul.
You take care, Pete.
Hold on.